This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Meet the Investor. My name is Ali Mwakaneno Gakweli, your usual host. And today I am talking to Francis Kare, who is the founder and CEO of ANCAP Venture Capital. And this is a venture capital that focuses on early stage businesses and helping them raise the necessary funding to build their businesses to growth stage. I think Francisca would be able to define that clearly better than I can. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me. Very excited to speak to you today. So ANCAP is really not your traditional VC. So we are much more a funding platform. And we were founded with the aim to really make early stage funding accessible to every good founder in sub-Saharan Africa. So when we started, what we saw is that there is we're still talking about this huge missing middle funding gap. Everyone knows about the gap, but it seems nothing is really happening at scale. And I think there are great efforts. There are VC funds, there are impact funds who are investing in great startups. But this is just they're just able to scratch the surface of business that need funding. So when we started, we're like, is there a way where we can actually make access to early stage funding scalable? Is there a way where we can blend the scale of microfinance with early stage capital? So what we're doing is that we're not a small investment team that meets entrepreneurs and then invests in them and handsholds and supports them, access to the networks, etc. But we are a completely tech-enabled funding platform that basically invests in entrepreneurs through a series of tests and algorithms that then selects the entrepreneurs we invest in.
Right. So maybe what are maybe three things that an early stage business should offer an investor like ANCAP for you to actually consider putting money into it?
Mm-hmm. So I think in general, we are really interested in every business. and we are focused on local founders. Mm-hmm. So we're only investing in companies with local founders, or at least a majority of the management team should be local founders. And they need to have the potential to scale over time. So you don't need to be high-tech, high-growth businesses. We're not looking for the next unicorn, but we're also not investing in mom-and-pop shops. So we are investing in businesses with exceptional founders who will grow their business organically over the next 50 to 20 years.
Why really focus on local founders? Because I literally have to ask this question because in Kenya, most of the startups that receive majority of their attention and majority of the funding are technically not Kenyan startups. The founding is not necessarily local. A majority of the team could be majority of the resources used and where the business lies could be Kenyan, stroke sub-Saharan African, but then the founding is not. So why this unconventional way?
We probably all know this famous study of Village Capital. Probably, I think it came out a few years ago about that 90% of VC funding, in East Africa went to expat-founded companies. And I think that's just absolutely unacceptable.
Why is that?
Because I think, why would you? Why do you really think that someone who didn't grow up here, who doesn't know the market, who doesn't know the challenges, is actually a better founder than a local founder? And I think the reason is that VC funding is mostly white, and very many investors automatically, and that's not it's not intentional, but they invest in people who look like them, who maybe went to the same universities, they have a different, have a similar upbringing. And I think that's the only reason why most funding went into expat funded companies so far. And I think this needs to change because, so we are investing in Africa because we think no one else in the world, currently there's more entrepreneurial potential than here. But that potential is brought by local founders.
So we've talked about maybe what you would like to see in an early stage business. Let's flip the coin here. In as much as Africa is underfunded, we have growing interest from venture capitalists and fund managers from all over the world. So why then, why would a founder pick ANCAP as an investment partner, mm-hmm. or as an investor compared to, you know, many others on the table?
Yeah. So I think one of the reasons is that we're doing really small tickets, and that's more like a technicality,
mm-hmm.
but we're investing between $10,000 to $50,000. And I think this is a ticket size that many, many investors do not go into. I mean, if you're like a VC fund, usually you would probably start at $200K or $500K,
right?
Because lower than that, the cost to do diligence, et cetera, is just too high. We are really kind of like, I think we are really targeting early stage entrepreneurs. So
mm-hmm.
we are usually the first investor that would go into your business. I think other than that, we are, and that's not surprising, but also when it comes to other benefits, we're more unconventional. So for the, basically, in order to be able to fund as many entrepreneurs as possible, and here we're talking about hundreds and then thousands in the future,
mm-hmm.
We have to sacrifice certain personal elements that other investors bring to the table.
What would those be?
We can't do any kind of like, basically from me to the founder, we can't do any coaching, we can't do any hand-holding. So we had to figure out a way where we can basically also build a support system that is fully digital, that is automated, and that is scalable to kind of like the hundreds of entrepreneurs we want to invest in. So what we've built is basically every entrepreneur that we invest in gets access to a dashboard. And that dashboard is connected to an accounting tool. And we basically provide them with insights into their financial health. We calculate automated kind of like KPI analysis, financial track records. We also calculate a track record for you.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the moment where you want to raise more external funding, you can use that track record to kind of like go out and say, look, this is how often I report on time. This is how often I repay on time. This is how my financials kind of like developed over time. So they're not kind of like dependent on our personal opinion of them and making them an introduction. And then last, we give them access to like a library of curated resources, but also training programs from partners like the African Management Institute or Angosa. So we decided instead of doing everything ourselves, we rely on analytics, but then also tapping into the ecosystem of resources that is already out there.
Before we get into what are some of the sectors that maybe you've already invested in, I have to ask this because investing in early stage businesses, period, is slightly riskier than investing in middle stage, late stage businesses. And be this something that you said, given the nature of your ticket sizes, of course, there's a whole cost element involved in appraising whether a business is worthy of investing in, or maybe the business needs to take more time and arrange their affairs. Why then would you go for small ticket sizes, Francesca?
This really is the reason why we exist. We said we want to be able to invest small ticket sizes in thousands of entrepreneurs. Like, we really want to be the one who is the first to basically help build a pipeline of businesses that grow over time. And so the main challenge was to actually lower the cost. And we thought that it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's interesting to see that everyone wants to invest in innovative businesses, but no one really innovates around the investment process itself or investment models. And so we decided to kind of like take on this fully automated digital approach that is hugely scalable. And so our due diligence cost and basically cost of deal making is an absolute fraction of what it usually is. Because there is no element in there where we sit down with the founder, we discuss kind of like their business, we look at their business plans, we look at their pitch decks, we discuss evaluation. Everything is automated. So basically a founder applies on the platform, they are run through a different number of tests on personality, on skills, on behavior, but also on the knowledge of their business.
Mm-hmm.
And then they automatically get a funding offer or not. And that funding offer is hugely standardized. So usually we buy a certain percentage of equity in the business that they then repurchase back over time at a price that is agreed beforehand. And so also that element kind of like saves costs because it's highly standardized. And then once they're transferred into the portfolio management, so the access to the dashboard, also that kind of like hugely standardized. So that's basically why we decided to go for early stage. And I think like when it comes to industries, we're invested in, I think at the moment, 6 or 7 different industries.
Yeah.
So we're like super broad. There are no industries we would exclude other than like coal and gas and gambling, etc. And I think that's also, for us, it's a matter of actually reducing risk. So we want to do, by the end of this year, we want to invest in at least 100 businesses at once. Inofficial target is 200, but 100 is something we can probably guarantee. And so if you invest in 100 businesses across 4 different countries and 6 different industries, you automatically have an element in your portfolio where you kind of like hugely diversify the risk. And so this is part of kind of like what we do is lower the risk of kind of like basically lower the risk of wrong investment by betting heavily on the founder, analyzing the founder quite intensely, but then also spreading the risk by investing in many businesses at the same time across different industries and countries.
I understand that this year you're launching actually your second cohort of investments. Could you talk about the first one? Maybe what was your experience in your first round of investments? Allow me to call it that if you don't mind. What are some of the things that you picked up on the way that would help you improve your processes to hit the 200 businesses target?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I need to say we are an early stage business ourselves. So we were officially founded in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, we're kind of like in the same range of early stage than our founders. And so the first cohort that we invested in for us was really kind of like our experimental pilot portfolio. So back then we didn't have anything. All we had was an idea about using different tests and new modes of investments to scale up funding. We didn't have a technology, we didn't have funding, we didn't have a team. So back then things were quite hands-on and very pragmatic, and in times maybe a little bit kind of like chaotic. But it helped us to kind of like very quickly invest in 27 businesses. And then from those businesses, basically learn and adapt. So what we did is that we put together a very kind of like process consisting of different building blocks, sending them a test here, sending them a survey there, doing an email here, etc. And then basically investing in those companies that performed best in at least one of the categories. So we put in a level of randomization. And then afterwards, we invested, basically they got a standardized investment offer, 10% of equity that they then buy back through their revenues. And then we sat down and basically watched what happened. And I think the learnings from those first investments really informed everything that we're doing now. So it informed what is actually our precise target group? What are the tests that have more predictive potential than others? Also, what is the right investment mode? But also, how do we solve the topic of payment, for example? So that first portfolio, really, basically everything we're doing now is based on the learnings from that portfolio.
So 2019, so the UNCAP is unofficially around two years old. And we're counting COVID years here.
Yeah.
The time which you started investing, or rather investing in founders in Africa, is also the time when the COVID-19 was the center of attention. How did COVID-19 affect some of the businesses that you're investing in, and how did you adapt to that?
Yeah, I mean, that was really, like, the timing was great, speaking sarcastically. So we paid out the first 24 investment last year in March. And that was really, like, I think probably, like, the week or the 2 weeks before COVID officially hit. I think borders in Kenya were still open, but kind of, like, then they closed. At that moment, my colleague and I were actually traveling here, and we were supposed to go from Nairobi to Kampala, and we weren't even allowed to enter anymore. So it was, like, really, we paid an investment, and then COVID hit. And I think it was interesting to see how that affects our founders. And of course, we were also worried on a more personal level for them. And some of them actually really benefited. So we have one founder in Uganda, and he runs like an e-commerce business. And he basically delivers produce from smallholder farmers to customers in Kampala. And for him, I mean, the first weeks were difficult because he wasn't allowed to run any logistics, but then he kind of like struck a deal with the government, and basically I think his kind of like numbers of customers really took off. But then there were other businesses in Rwanda that were just not allowed to run any operations. So I think basically for them, although the investment was designed to help them buy a machine or something, kind of like buy assets, I think most of them then actually had to take the investment to just keep afloat for a couple of months. None of them actually went bust, so all of them are still alive. And I think that also shows that my feeling is that business in sub-Saharan Africa are much more resilient than in Europe. I think it's a mentality thing. I think founders are more resilient because they had to and they have to. unfortunately. And then second, I think before you actually declare bankruptcy, you probably try everything to keep your business afloat. Maybe you have one side hustle, two side hustles, three side hustles, and then eventually things get better and then you kind of like start focusing on your business 100% again.
Right.
And I think that's something that we can see in our portfolio. Although some of them really were struggling to get any revenues, they're now kind of like recovering and revenues are taking up again.
I'd like to focus on COVID-19 because it was that uncertainty that almost hit everyone better than we could have predicted. With the businesses that were affected in your portfolio, of course, since you'd already agreed on a predetermined rate prior to the investment, how did you really adjust that to suit current realities?
So we actually didn't adjust it, but how it works is that an entrepreneur buys back the shares we bought from them at a price we agreed beforehand, and they buy it back through 5% of their quarterly revenues.
Mm-hmm.
Back then it was quarterly, now it's monthly, but kind of like regular revenues.
Right.
So if you don't have any revenues, you're basically not paying anything back.
So it's just a stalemate.
Yeah, so it's just a stalemate. And we actually prolonged kind of like the period that companies didn't have to pay at all,
mm-hmm.
to kind of not cut into the limited revenues they have. But in general, like if there are no revenues, then there's nothing to pay.
Okay. Looking at the continent here, you say you're working on investing in four different countries. Kenya, Rwanda, remember the two.
So currently we are actually invested in seven different countries. So
okay.
We are invested in Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, Nigeria, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Mali, and Malawi.
Yeah.
We are now kind of like refocusing on four countries for the next cohort, being Kenya, Rwanda, Uganda, and Nigeria. Just because we're kind of like seeing how we can actually scale up the bureaucratic part of investment.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, our approach really lends itself to scale to all types of different countries in sub-Saharan Africa. And we want to get to the founders that would actually, like, they're not on anyone's radar. They're not in Nairobi, but they might be somewhere in rural Kenya. They're not in Kigali, they're not in Kampala, and they're not maybe not even in East Africa. So we really want to get to those entrepreneurs that have actually no chance of getting access to any type of seed funding at all.
There are a couple of funding gaps in Africa that I'd really, really want to talk about. For example, we have a sectorial gap, in my opinion. I feel like anything fintech generally gets more funding where agriculture lags behind. Clean tech tries, but then we're really not there yet. And non-tech businesses really don't get much attention. And also when it comes to gender-wise, we see that, again, most of the funding goes to male founders. Female founders are not as well represented as is sustainable or preferable. But then before we get to that, your process really focuses on the potential of the founder. My question would be, how do you balance out with other aspects of the business that could determine its success? And B, what are some of the challenges that dump entrepreneurial potential in Africa?
So to the first question, we really believe that in the stage that we invest in, the founder or the founding team is the most important thing. I mean, everything else, the market, the business model, etc. I mean, it's good to know, but most likely it will change anyways. So what we want to know is really like, are you someone who can run a good business? Are you someone who can build a good team? Are you someone who can pivot a business if needed? We're doubling down on you as the founder.
Right.
Because we think you're the most important element in the beginning.
So sort of the founder is literally the core here.
Yeah. And I think that's actually, it's not that different how a traditional VC would act, right? Most VCs are also, they bet heavily on the team.
Mm-hmm.
That's also what they believe in. We're just trying to automate that process and by that also make it less biased than it is. So mm-hmm. there are no decisions are being made by anyone in the team personally. So our opinion on who should get investment or not doesn't play any role. And so on, kind of like the dampening of the potential, I think actually like there's no dampening of potential happening at all. I think there's no continent with greater entrepreneur potential than Africa.
Yeah.
But the potential, of course, hasn't been able to be fully realized. And I think there are many challenges to that, and for sure one being funding. I mean, running a business, scaling a business without having access to any additional cash is just really, really hard. And I think there are just a number of very dedicated business models that can kind of like completely bootstrap. But most of them, in order to grow, they will need some type of external funding eventually. And if you're like an early stage founder, you're too risky to banks, you're too large for microfinance, you're too small for an investor. So you can rely on our family and friends, but like most of them also can just kind of like give you $50,000 in cash.
Yeah, I get that. Maybe back to the fast component.
Sure.
Again, there's the funding gap that we've discussed. What do you think previous investors in most parts of the continent could do better? And what is Uncap VC doing differently to make sure that, hey, we have more money flowing to one, other sectors, two, female founders, three, regionally here? Because thing is, if you look at the map of Africa, there's comparatively better funding flowing into Nigeria, Kenya, South Africa, a little bit of Egypt, Uganda, not so much. Francophone Africa, in my opinion, forgotten. How do you balance that? How do you balance their attention to address these gaps?
Well, that's a big question. So I think kind of like through the first part, like what is traditional VC doing wrong? I mean, so I'm very new in this whole investment game, right? So I'm really not the one to tell that others are doing anything wrong. But I think what the ecosystem is doing wrong, that I think a VC is a really, really good source of funding for a very specific type of business. So if you're a high tech, high growth business, then VC funding is probably the way to go. But when we talk about early stage business in Africa, we talk about kind of like a multitude of different businesses. So I think what we definitely need to see more is alternative types of funders. Funders who are not dependent on this one single liquidity event. Funders who understand that there are businesses who are more dedicated for other types of funding, a revenue-based type of funding.
Mm-hmm.
Funders who are more diverse in their management teams. I mean, we know that if you have more senior, female, basically senior team members in a GP, then the chance of funding women is twice as likely. So
is that the case here?
I mean, so we don't call the shots when it comes to making a decision.
Mm-hmm.
So in our case, at the moment, I think we're doing okay on the amount of female funders.
What's okay?
We need to do better. I think at the moment it's like 30%, 30, 40%. That's not great. But I think actually de-biasing the whole investment process is one of the best levers to actually diversify whom you invest in. And here I'm not only talking about female founders, but also local founders, founders who don't pitch like someone who went to a business school, founders who don't know how to present themselves because they've never run through a kind of like a pitch training. So I think, and this is what we are trying to do, and what we can see, for example, with cases like Clear Bank, who is now ClearCo in Canada, they are investing in e-commerce business completely remote through kind of like an algorithm. And I think they fund 8 times more female funders than a traditional VC, just purely because they take out this kind of like personal bias that just every investor automatically brings to the table, even if you try hard to avoid that. So I think that's how we try to do it. Kind of like, basically, we don't discriminate against any funder, any founder who applies. Everyone can run through the application process. And as long as you do well on the tests, we don't even know how you look like. We don't know how you pitch. I mean, we don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is also for us the way to kind of like scale to other countries. I mean, we have this kind of like focus, at least at the moment, on East Africa, because that's when we started on CAB. This is where the first contacts we had basically helped us get it off the ground. Because, I mean, most kind of like bigger organizations, funds, etc., are with kind of like Western roots, are based in Kenya. So naturally, this is how we started. But I like really want to quickly move to other countries. We're not able to serve Francophone countries yet because the whole process is English.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something that could actually easily be done. And so the goal really is to kind of like go to countries that are get much less attention from funders than East Africa, for example, or Nigeria.
So, Francisca, something that I'd really, really want to know is you said that your process is digital, which, again, makes it very, very easy to scale and reach more founders compared to other ways in which VCs work. My concern would be, how do you make sure that your process is not compromised in terms of a founder blindsiding you, either by misrepresenting their business or, say, well, misrepresenting is the word I'd really, really go with.
Yeah, sure. So I can't go into too much detail, but basically we work a lot with behavior science. So we try to figure out like what are ways, how can you figure out if someone's actually speaking the truth? How do you figure out if someone's actually committed? When it comes to, for example, the personality tests, you as a founder don't really have an incentive to lie because you don't know what we're looking for.
Right.
When it comes to the skill tests, for example, even, for example, around financial literacy, even if you ask someone else to take the test, we know that you at least know someone with very good financial literacy. And for us, that's good enough. It's kind of like we want to know if you have either yourself or access to certain skills and behavior that will make you a good founder. And when it comes about the business itself, we are looking for certain cues in the way that you speak about your business. And also about how well are you actually able to talk about your business as kind of like a proxy about how well do you actually know what you're doing there. So instead of thinking that we could be any sort of expert on your business model, we think that if you already prove to be a good founder based on certain skills and personality things, then we trust you to be the expert, but we want to see that you actually are. So there will be founders who can talk about their business in length and detail and other founders who are not able to do that. And then other than that, there are certain kind of like, as I said, kind of like certain cues in the process that help us to determine if this is actually truthful information or not.
Moving away from that, one of the challenges that I would argue founders in say Kenya face immediately is the cost of setting up a business and the initial cost of running that business. As you're aware, given that you're already looking into Kenya and Rwanda comparatively, again, subjective to my opinion, Rwanda offers lower cost of setting up, lower regulatory barriers compared to Kenya. Maybe how can startup founders in markets that you're working into like Kenya sort of navigate around the high cost of setting up a business?
I think this is probably really where accelerators and incubators come into play. I mean, we only focus on founders who already have some revenue traction. So we would not invest in you if your business is basically an idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree that the costs of setting up a business are really high. And then this is maybe where kind of like learning from others, first of all, how they navigated kind of like the whole founding journey is probably kind of like a good way to start. And this is what accelerators and incubators can provide you with, kind of like a network of peers. And then I think maybe this is also a good space for kind of like some startup grants. I'm in general not a huge fan of grants in general. I think they're kind of like if you start with a huge grant, you're kind of like you get a wrong incentive to actually get your business cash flow positive. But to cover some initial costs, it could be quite helpful to do that. And I think it's I mean, in other countries, you have subsidies, right?
Yeah.
You have subsidies to set up a business. In Germany, you have programs that help you set up a business when you're kind of like just starting out. And so as long as we don't have that in Kenya, the question is like, how can you provide that first subsidy to founders who really have, can even stem the cost of setting up their business in the first place? But this is not my area of expertise, right? I mean...
That's okay. Maybe as we approach towards the end of the podcast here, I like what NCAP is doing with local founders. Again, being a Kenyan, we've witnessed the gap in funding for local founders vis-a-vis expat founders. And maybe what do you think it will take to scale the model to serve more African countries that are facing similar challenges?
You mean to scale our model?
To scale your model, precisely.
Actually, I think it just like we're going to do another round of testing with the new cohort that we're investing in.
Mm-hmm.
that will give us more. Basically, our model is like a model of current iterating. Like every new data point that we get on investment helps us to get more precise in the selection process, get more precise in the investment model, and help us to better support them in the investment phase. And I think the moment that we realize that kind of like the whole process is running really smoothly in the four countries we invest in now, we will start going to other countries. Because for us, like we don't need to set up shop. We don't need to set up a local team in the region. So we're definitely going to target other countries next year. And our goal is like we want to go big. we want to invest in thousands of companies over the next 10 years. Like $1 billion is our target. And that kind of like on an average ticket size of $20,000, that means like 50,000 entrepreneurs.
Wow.
It sounds very big and very ambitious, but I think if you really want to disrupt something, you need to have an audacious goal, and that's ours.
Apart from your audacious goal, let's go back in time here. So if you were to start NCAP today, it's 2021 August, what do you think you'd have done differently compared to how you started NCAP in 2019?
I think it's very hard to tell because in general, I'm very happy where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if I now look back and like, things could have gone faster. But I think people really underestimate the element of time when starting a business. I think some things just really take time to kind of like wrap your mind around certain concepts that you're trying to disrupt. What I would have done differently for sure is start with a much larger test base in the beginning. So when we first run our very kind of like hands-on rough application process in 2019, we had around 200 applications.
Yeah.
And we didn't do any marketing, nothing, because we didn't even know yet what our product would be. But that means that with like a sample of 200 applicants and like 30 investments, you can't build a solid algorithm. You can kind of like test some hypothesis, but your test will not be statistically relevant or significant. So I think that's the only thing I would have done differently in hindsight, kind of like test larger from the start to start with a better database. But back then, that was actually not possible because we didn't have funding. We weren't set up. We didn't even know where we would go. For us, this first pilot was not even part of product development. It was just part of better understanding the problem.
Yeah, this is actually all I had for today. I really wanted this session to get to know NCAP and understand the unconventional nature of what you do specifically, how you focus on more of the process here and building businesses better to access investments as they grow. Is there anything that maybe I might have missed that you'd like to add?
No, I think you covered it really well. I mean, it's not like what we're doing is not very straightforward. So I think whoever is still confused what we're doing, like check out the website. And I think like we're like whoever hears that and wants to apply, like please go ahead, please go on our website and apply to become part of the next cohort. And thank you. Thanks for this opportunity to talk to you. I really enjoyed the chat.
All right. To our listeners, that's all I had for this episode. As Francesca said, if you're interested in NCAP, be sure to check out the website. The website is unconventional.capital. Thank you for listening to this show. See you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.